Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we are talking about new versus used. When is it better to use new things versus when is it better to use old things? I think a lot of this came about because...
Is this a new versus used, or is this a would you rather have the new versus the old?
Well, let me tell you why it came about and then we can come up with that on the spot here together right now today.
Great.
When we were talking about using old tools, Steve had said, you know, he just really likes the stories that are told behind some of these older things. And so I know I was sharing it, but like he was saying, he probably wouldn't restore an old handle like this because there's a story to be told in that handle and you could wipe off all of the Japanning and get rid of it.
Patina.
Yes. Is it there a difference?
No, I mean, that's what you're talking about. The patina, the age, the story that's
there. I'm talking about the set in paint.
Right.
The Japanning. Like you could take that off entirely and then you could refinish it or put a new coat of paint on it. But ultimately there's a story to be had in this old plane being old.
Yeah.
And that extends further than just that. But there's just this mindset within our program right now where it's like old things are better. And there's just there's a goodness to this old stuff. And it's something that I've heard Steve, my instructor, say, something that I've heard you say many times. And so it kind of brought about this question of what would you use new? What would you use old? What would bring it about? And so that can be anywhere from old doors and old windows. Do you restore them? Do you spend the money to restore them? Or do you spend the money to buy new ones?
We'll stick with the old versus used.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right. So we've got a whole world ahead of us. So what, like, let's start with doors and windows.
Well, I mean, you know, most people aren't going to allow us to put old doors in their house unless they're really trying to convey a story. Not to say that we didn't build houses with old doors. We did a Hayes townhouse for a client and we went to an architectural salvage yard in Louisiana and picked out old doors. That's kind of part of the story we're trying to do. The problem with getting old doors is that they're, you know, if a standard door is 28 by 6'8", 28 inches wide, 6'8", 6'8" tall, you know, those doors that you get from salvage are 27.5 inches by 6'7" and, you know, a quarter because they've been chopped up. They've been, you know, someone put carpet in, someone had a rug, they chopped off the door. And so all of a sudden now it's a little bit wonky. It's been painted a few times. So the amount of work that's going to go into getting that door looking brand new, you're, you know, even though you buy it for $500, $300, $200, You're putting another $1,500 into it. Now you've got a really expensive door
that you might as well
build a new one. So that is a really long way of going around new versus old. I just think it's hard to always to try to pick a used door and even harder, I think, with the used window.
Even harder with the used window.
Even harder.
So a lot of your jobs, I know, are courthouse jobs where you are making or restoring a lot of old windows on these historic courthouses. Is that incorrect? Am I inaccurate in saying that? Or are you making new windows to go in historic courthouses?
We are restoring windows, okay? Mm-hmm. Typically, the way that happens is the frames stay in place. The frames stay, the jam, okay, the frame, the window frame, sill and everything else stays in place, and the sash get taken back to our shop and restored.
Hmm.
The difference is that if you have to take the frame out with the window, it starts, you know, racking, it starts kind of falling apart. And so it isn't a really easy thing to pick up out of an old building, you know, and pick up and put it into a new building.
Yeah.
The other thing is that different periods of windows come with different proportions. So an arts and crafts window would be a 3x5, whereas a Victorian window might be, you know, 2x6.
Mm-hmm.
2 inches wide, 6 feet tall. And so, you know, a 2 light versus a, you know, 6/1. And so they're very different personalities. And so being someone who's a big proponent for using used materials, doors are hard, windows are even harder, but things like brick, stone are easy. Flooring, like I want to use used wood flooring all the time because I think it adds character and depth to a project and things like that.
And you feel like it is reusable.
Absolutely. And I think old growth wood and things like that have a tighter grain, more character, better, longer lasting. And so...
So what is it about that that makes it more usable? I guess I would think, like, logically and intuitively, a flooring would be way harder to reuse than a because door or window because you're walking over it. You know?
Yeah, you can take a beam and you know, a 6x8 beam, and if it doesn't have too many mortise holes in that, you could cut that 6 times and make flooring that's 8 inches wide, 10, 12 feet long, and it has this incredible character grain. You sand it down,
yeah,
and it looks awesome, right? It has depth and character and beauty. And so, you know, that's a used product that, you know, we take and use salvaged lumber all the time. We take salvaged lumber and build windows and doors with it.
Yeah.
Because old growth wood is so much better than new growth wood. And so mantles would be something that are very easy to use an old mantle versus a new one. And it doesn't take much work to adapt them to change sizes. Mantles are something that are, you know,
pretty standard.
I mean, probably the most common architectural salvage item out there.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And when you say mantle, are you just talking about the top part of the fireplace?
No,
I'm talking about the
whole surround. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's a company in Dallas called Pate. All they do is French and English and imported fireplace mantles. Not all they do, but you know,
that's it.
80% of their store is salvaged fireplaces.
Wow.
The other thing is salvaged doors. And so, you know, if we're going to just look at what the market will bear, then you look at those two things and go, yeah, those are pretty popular.
Yeah. Wow. That is so interesting. So I guess there's a lot more that can be reused than what I thought.
Yeah,
on the initial.
Yeah, I mean, if you think the book Moving Rooms, you know, it was a book written about the trade of English, French, and American interiors around the turn of the century, but it goes back hundreds of years that you know, the castle's being torn down. They took the walls off the house and moved it to another house. And so the DuPont, you know, winter tour, that is a home of salvaged rooms.
Yeah.
They took out rooms from houses that were being torn down.
That's crazy.
And put them in new houses. And so there's a lot of precedent for doing that. I would think that to patrons and to people listening, the opportunity is great. And look, we live in an era of ugly houses with no story, no narrative, no tradition, no heritage, poor craftsmanship. And when you can go buy a room that was, you know, crafted by hand, built 300 years ago, immediately infused character and tradition into your home, it's kind of, why wouldn't I do that?
There's something really fun that I was blown away about. And maybe I shouldn't have been, but it really shook me. There's these guys that take old homes and they actually put an Excel sheet together of the man hours that were put into the old homes. And so you have like this measurable like work that was put into these old things. One, it'd be hilarious to compare today's versus then, but it would also be interesting to see, and I thought about this and nowhere to talk about it in class. I'm not going to be like, did you ever think about, but I was thinking it would be really cool to see the man hours put in back then versus today and how long each of the things have lasted.
I think that's, I
would be fascinated because if you're like, okay, it's standard for a guy to drill in drywall, putty drywall or whatever, you know, let's say an hour for 7 square feet, whatever. You got a timing. Yeah. And then you get, well, I don't know what they would have used for drywall back then.
Well, you think about
it too, you know,
you think about, Lydia, who is on our show, Drywall Shorty. Yeah. And, you know, she does production houses up in Bozeman, Montana.
I think so.
They're doing basically about a house a week, tape, bed and texture, right? Someone else hangs the rock. And so if they're hanging the rock in a week, and she's tape bed, that's 2 weeks, you know, and let's just say that's a 2,000 square foot house or 3,000 square foot house.
Say 3,000.
Is that what it was? 3,000 square foot house, you know, which is this kind of, you know, a starter home is about 2,200. So maybe just over a starter home.
Yeah.
you know, to plaster that home, to lathe it, plaster it, you know, wait for it to dry, all that other stuff.
Yep.
I got to think that that was three weeks to four, you know, almost
similar
twice.
Size crew.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to the reason, I mean, you think about the steps. They had to nail the lathe up.
Yep.
Okay. They have and to.
We don't see a lot of lathe in Texas, right?
No, there's a lot of lathe.
There's a lot. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, wow. Yeah. I thought we used like the chicken wire type of material.
That's later. So, that's later. So, okay. So houses before 1930, 1920, you have wood lathe.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay, cool.
And then wire lathe is more common
later on.
Between 20, or nice houses in the 20s, you know, most houses in the 30s and 40s, and then drywall comes in.
But so you're basically saying it's double the time.
I think like it's double the time, would be my guess, is that putting up lathe, because there's three coats of plaster that you got to put on. You put on a brown coat, you put on this kind of layer coat, brown coat or scratch coat, final coat, the three-step layer.
So the first coat does the keys. The second coat is just on top of that. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a, and so they're sticking to plaster, I guess.
And then there's the final coat.
That gets painted?
That gets painted.
Huh.
So, you know, there's typically three steps in there. You know, it's no wonder they invented drywall, because, you know, the arms on those dudes who were spreading out that first layer of plaster. I mean, talk about Popeye or, you know, whatever they were. Yeah. They're slinging mud.
Yeah. All day.
Yeah. Like concrete mud, not drywall mud, not gypsum, you know, heavy. You know, it's crazy. And so
do you ever get any hardcores who want you to put up that old lathe on?
Yeah, the problem, the complaint I hear about plaster homes is that the phone signals inside the house is terrible. And so I don't think people are wanting it from a,
not itching for it.
Yeah. Right, they're not fighting for it. And I don't think our market has done an especially good job of fighting for it, mm-hmm. and just saying we really need this for integrity.
But do you think that that's something that, you know, new versus used, that's something that's a better to do new in that instance, you know,
which
drywall
better? How?
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm just throwing it out there. There's no cell signal. There's no, it takes a lot longer. The slinging heavy mud on the wall.
Costs more.
So in that instance, it's like, okay, I could see like the only instance where you would want to do used or like the old way in that style. The only reason that you would want to do that is if you're really trying to be true and traditional to a home style, correct?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question.
Because otherwise it's like, yeah, just put drywall up. Like it's not necessarily going to be seen. It's not going to be.
You can... I feel like you can feel the difference.
Oh, really?
Between a drywalled home and a plastered home.
Drywall being more airy?
Yeah, it doesn't feel as, you know, sometimes you'll walk into a house after you've put insulation in it and it's just this dead sound.
Hmm.
And you're like, oh my gosh, we've got insulation in here. If I feel like the same thing happens with the plaster, that it ends up being just a denser feel inside. Hmm. And so-
Your phone feels it too.
Your phone feels it too. I don't know. It's probably the reason I don't do it. I don't think I can come up with a reason that I can look a customer in the eye and say, we really should do this, right? And they were like, why? It's just better, right? You know, what are you going to say? And yeah. So,
well, and I think that's the heart of what this episode is looking to answer and to figure out. Like, is it just better? Is it? The only reason you'd actually want to do it is if you're trying to be a true traditionalist or you're trying to do a period revival piece. Yeah,
I mean, we do it on courthouses. We do it on, you know, historic properties that are looking for that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm sitting here struggling with it because I'll fight for traditional trades in other areas.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Here I am
not fighting
for this one. I'm going, Brent, you've got a, you know, double standard here.
Yeah.
That you're fighting for.
We've got him. We've got him, guys.
So anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean that, and that's why we're asking.
As I continue to think about it, there are some traditions and details that happen with plaster work, which are much more difficult with gypsum.
Yeah.
And you know, I think of some of the carved medallions and some of the decorative plaster work that used to happen versus what's available today.
But even still, like, I'm assuming you're talking about some of the decorative plaster and some of the curved ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
even still, wouldn't you still drywall up to a point and then finish it off with a little plaster?
Yes, Jackson.
Or something?
I'm struggling here. So yeah. you kind of got me over a barrel. So I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, that's interesting. I guess when it comes to less actual structure of the home things. Well, actually, just back to structure of the home things. I was jumping to appliances, but we'll stay here for a little bit. One of the things that is interesting is the outsides of the homes. I do think some of the traditional stuff is better than some of the newer stuff. And when we're talking newer stuff, there is new, which is plastic, which I think everyone...
Like what product you have? Siding or...
Siding.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the outside of the home. Like, I guess I was thinking of the plaster walls and I was just going a layer further.
Right.
Some of the new insulation, the off-gassing is terrible. So insulation-wise, you'd probably want the rolled fiberglass type of stuff, right?
Or well, would you I like rock wool. We've kind of fallen into rock wool as far
what
as...
What is rock wool? Is that the sprayed stuff or is
no,
it...
No. So, yeah, there's a whole number of things.
Because the sprayed stuff's kind of off-gassy.
Yeah, I mean, I hate foam. Yeah. I think it's our asbestos for our generation. Yeah. I think there's going to be lawsuits. There's going to be all kinds of things that are going on with foam insulation.
Since going to North Bennett, I've heard so many people say that exact thing. Like an unreasonable amount of time where I'm like, oh, this is actually probably a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there's real problems with foam. And so fiberglass is, I think, whipped glass. I mean, it's just basic glass heated up and they extrude it. And, yeah. Or whip it. It's almost like cotton candy or something. Yeah. And so mineral wool is actually a rock. It comes from it's spun or, you know, kind of made into this block form. You know, rodents and things don't like it. Won't chew through it. It's fireproof. It won't burn. It's a great sound insulator.
Yeah.
And so it dries out, right? Because the problem with foam, especially open cell foam, is it gets in your walls, and if it hits water, water just absorbs it and then just holds on to that water. And so if it's a continual link, it literally will not start letting the water go until it's just super, super hydrated, and literally your studs and stuff will start rotting out. I believe people are going to start stepping through their roofs because we'll be up on the roof looking to see if there's hail damage, and we'll step through a spot because it's been wet for
so long,
5 years.
But they never knew because it didn't leak through there. It
didn't leak through.
That's crazy. Yeah. I know you're saying, like, I think this will happen, but still, even just the thought of it sitting in the wool or in the
foam. Let me just say this. It will happen.
Really?
It will happen.
Oh.
I just don't know how prevalent it'll be, right?
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
That's fun to hear. Modern building, build science. We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, ViewRail,
America's leading manufacturer of floating stairs and modern cable glass railings.
They handle every part of the process from design, engineering, manufacturing, delivery, all the way to installation.
There is a 10-year structural and finish warranty on all products installed by a ViewRail certified technician.
Nearly all components are made in-house, giving you more control over style, material, finishes, budget, and timeline.
All products are designed as a modular, integrated system that are engineered for easy installation. It's like putting together an erector set.
Thanks so much again, ViewRail, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so that's the inside of the house. So Rockwell's a good addition
on fiberglass. If we just looked at this thing, what sells, right? If you just look at Old Home Supply, what do they sell? They sell doors. Okay. They sell lighting. Okay. They sell hardware.
What do you mean by lighting? Like old lamps and such?
Yeah.
Or,
okay, 100%. Cool. Yeah. I mean, old chandeliers, old sconces. Yeah.
Oh, that
old,
makes total sense.
Old stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are beautiful.
Yeah. No, they're great. And so they're...
Probably made out of brass, probably made
out of good materials. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are, Hunter fans. People will buy old Hunter fans because they're built to last. They're built to last forever.
Name brands have become associated with things that are built to last. Like, you know, bench planes are a great example of that, where everyone uses the Stanley numbering system because Stanley was such a good plane back in the day. And now they've even dropped off in quality, but they're still the standard, you know?
Bathtubs, plumbing fixtures, but not necessarily the plumbing guts.
Yeah.
right? Like the faucets and things like that, not as much.
A lot of the new plumbing is better than the lead pipes and other things like that.
Well, in a 1900s house, the supply lines for your water and the hot and cold water was galvanized pipe. Okay, it was rarely copper at that time. Galvanized pipe is rusts over time. At some point, a 3/4 inch line will be allowing about 1/4 inch of water through because it's just so full of gunk. If you've seen any old houses where they cut the pipes, you look at the inside of those things, it's a rust bucket.
Yeah, okay, wow.
And so that is like I wouldn't put a sink valve. I wouldn't put a, you know, shower valve. Yeah. I wouldn't do any of that stuff in old plumbing.
But the hardware itself, yes. The innards.
The innards I would
run from.
Yes. Right. So the stuff in the wall, the galvanized pipe I would not use. Yeah. PEX and copper, I think, are better products. The design for cross handle things and things that one in is great. You don't find people using a lot of plumbing fixtures over and over again.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But lighting is a big thing. So yeah. there are some things that we know work mm-hmm. because they're still selling and they sell all the time and everything else.
That is a better way of thinking about it rather than just going to what is selling.
Yeah.
Old
what,
roofs.
What has value that yeah. people are saving it and selling it?
Shingle
yeah.
tiles.
Yeah. Yeah. Roof exactly. tiles. So there's a roof slate and tile company that is a, their business is salvage roofs.
Yeah.
So they'll salvage slate. They'll salvage Ludovici roofs.
Oh, yeah, Ludovici.
Yeah, they'll salvage those things.
What is Ludovici? I've heard the name a ton, but is it the tile or is it the...
So it's a company. It's one of my favorite companies. They are a tile company. The reason they're a favorite, they make clay tile like we make millwork, right? It's so custom. It's handmade operations. Oh, awesome. It's great material. They've really got it down to a science. So anyway, they're a great company. But yeah, those are things that people are salvaging and reusing, right? A lot. But stone is another thing that they'll salvage. Brick is another thing that they'll salvage.
What do you feel like salvage brick is like? Like we're obviously in Texas where there's a hub for brick. How do you feel like brick salvage plays into that? Like here, like we have an abundance of it. Are people like, we got to get more brick? Or because we've got brick headquarters here, people are like, yeah, we're just going to buy new. You know, does that affect the skew at all, being that we're a hub?
I mean, for our clients and our jobs, we're recommending old brick on the right times. Hmm. That Louisiana Hayes townhouse, we used all salvaged brick. And it was New Orleans, St. Louis, and Chicago. It wasn't Chicago, St. Louis, New Orleans, and somewhere else. Salvage from buildings from those areas. So that that determined the blend color that we were using. But we were using salvage bricks for their project because they wanted that old look.
Is it because the look is more historic or is it because the material was better that they went for the restored brick?
Well, so, if you look at old brick, typically bricks, historic bricks were solid.
Hmm. No
sometimes
holes.
Called a paver, right? And so they cut the holes in it to make it more stable and to do things like that to make it, faster to kiln and things like that. So that was a production process that they began to do that people perceive that solid brick is better.
Yeah, that's great. No, that was exactly what I asked.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So a lot of stuff on the actual house itself.
Yeah, I mean, and then you go and say, I know the people that are selling entire houses from Europe, right?
They ship them over?
Yeah, they've basically gone to these houses that have been abandoned, but the stone on the outside, sometimes the windows are still there, sometimes the roofs are still there. Literally go in, document the whole thing, and then take the tile, take the slate off the thing,
pop it in a bag.
Yeah, take the thing, number the stones. And there's houses in Dallas that have been done that way.
No way. What's the cost on some? Is it just astronomical or is
it's not that much because you've got basically you've bought the building for free basically. And then all your labor is in dismantling and bringing it over.
Oh my God.
So when you think about having to go to a stone yard and custom cut stone to do these other things,
there's no labor costs.
It's actually cost effective to do it. To have the right team to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But there's a house I visited in Richmond, Virginia. When I went there, I did my video on it. There's two houses there that were both salvaged, built in the 20s. They're both salvaged from historic houses in England. One's called Agecroft, and but they were historic buildings in England that were brought over here. So
dang,
yeah. So a lot of material can be reused.
When would they have been built? Like what age?
One was from the 1500s. One was a Tudor era building.
Oh my gosh!
And the other one was Elizabethan. So 1600s, 1700s.
Can you imagine being like, my house was built in England? And you're like, what?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
That's really cool.
And it speaks to, I don't know how many houses today.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there thinking through these houses. Really nice houses today.
Yeah.
Could be that in 200 years, they're going to be still there, that someone would say, well, let's take it down and take it to Europe and rebuild it, right?
Yeah. That is a lot.
Because we've changed the way we build.
Yeah. There's something to... just the what we build defines us of it all. Like, that is so true. Such a true statement. What we build defines us. We as a class at North Bennett Street are often talking like, oh my gosh, I wonder what people are going to say about someone brought up the other day that they have renamed McMansions officially. They have named them Millennium Mansions because it was at the turn of the millennium. It's one of the characteristic buildings of our time period. The Millennium Mansion. Millennium Mansion. It's kind of hard to say.
Millennium McMansion or Millennium Mansion?
Instead of calling them McMansions, the McMansion is the Millennium Mansion.
That's interesting.
Which is such a sad commentary on where we're at. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, this time period defined by the McMansion,
Yeah.
So just to the point, they're saying, I wonder what everyone's going to say about our time period.
They're commodities, right? And the reason we're even having this conversation about, salvaging old parts is because the commoditization of doors, of windows, of brick, of trim, that's another thing that can be reused.
Trim.
Of those products has cheapened them so much, we're now looking at salvage products
as being better.
As being a better solution for a new house today because the new products on the market are so bad.
Yeah. Well, and also it just speaks to, the one thing that one of the guys in our class said was, I actually don't know if those houses will be around for people to look back on and go, oh, look at that time period. I think it will be like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I keep saying that the houses today are disposable. And I know what I mean by that, but I also haven't begun to see, I haven't seen news stories of them tearing down neighborhoods that were built 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, Stephen Muzan in his book, The Original Green, talks about people restore and fix houses that they love.
Yeah.
And so you have to build something beautiful so that people will love it. And the snout nose houses, the ones with the garage coming out the front and everything else, they're called snout nose houses. Looks like a pig's nose. He said his point is that they're so ugly, no one's going to want to fix it up.
Right.
And so at some point, they just get pushed over or fall down.
So you're saying you haven't heard stories of people pushing them over yet because
they're only 20 or 30 years old. And so they're right at that age where
we may start seeing developments.
Yeah, we may start seeing developments. I mean, what product there is worth saving?
Mm-hmm. None.
I mean,
there's like a fine,
maybe unless the brick, but that's the only long lasting product on those houses.
Right. How some people take like salvaged, there was a house we visited where it was like parts of a boat, like from France,
right.
And they took them off and they used them as like the, what are they called? Joists. Mm-hmm. There's that, like maybe they've done some custom something or another that's like a talking piece of their house, but ultimately it's just like, what are you taking? What are you saving there? Maybe some mahogany walling or like that they put in the study or something or...
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what's there that land, I suspect, it would be the reason why they tear it down. The land is worth something, but the house isn't.
Right.
And so they'll just, just bulldoze them all.
Start again.
And then start again.
Well, and there's the question of, a lot of those new developments are being built and not a lot of people are moving into them necessarily. So which are there just empty houses? Like, have you seen China's empty house thing?
Yeah.
It's just crazy. They've got like development upon development upon development of just empty houses, houses that never will be filled by people.
Yeah, their economy was propped up for a long time on kind of ghost developments, right, and people investing in, you know, future properties and,
sounds similar,
and real estate. Yeah, there's some. But anyway, it's a, yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. Okay, the last facet of this, I think, comes down to appliances/tools. And then I think that wraps up the discussion on new versus old. So,
well, I mean, so we were talking about what new product would you want in your house,
yeah,
right? And so, you know, certainly the technology that's new today, I mean, there were no routers that you're going to be bringing forward, you know, and technology.
No microwaves.
What's the law, that the Murphy's Law?
Moore's Law.
Moore's Law, yep. which states that
every 2 years, technology will be 2 times better than it was a year before. And that's due to the size of transistors and how they progress downwards. But it's enabled our iPhones to get slimmer and, you know, all that stuff.
Right. I mean, you know, you look at...
And it tracks. Like,
meme where from my generation, they show a camera, a video recorder, a voice memo, a telephone, mm-hmm, and, you know,
all these devices.
All these devices that are just right here, right?
There's an Apple commercial where they took what are those machine presses?
Oh, yeah.
And they pressed them all together in to make the Apple.
Yeah. So the technology-wise, I don't want a TV that's 4 years old, right? And so, you know, I'm not using an old tube, you know, TV.
I am. They're better for playing Melee on, so it's
great.
60 frames per second is perfect. That. Yeah, CRT TVs.
So it's just, you know, technology-wise, you're obviously getting all new stuff.
Yeah,
You know, Windows, we're building Windows the way they used to be built, but mm-hmm, we're not using salvage Windows. We have used salvage steel windows. Now, steel windows are something that are easily transportable and can add a real character bump to, and we put those in new houses.
It's because they hold their shape better than...
Yeah, and they don't get racked as much, and they don't... You get a wood window racked and stuff like that, it just never...
What do you mean by racked?
It just kind of falls over, and then you got to get the frame back together and getting it all tightened up and getting the weather stripping working. It's just... You're going to have a lot of labor hours in there, where steel, you can take it out, move it, put it back in without a lot of extra labor hours.
Makes sense.
So, I'm thinking of a house we're about to build right now. And if we're not using old stuff, we're using things that match old stuff, the way old stuff was built.
Right.
Right. And so the windows are our 100-year window. The roof is Ludovici new roof.
You're not taking a lot of inspiration off of things that were built in the past 30 or 40 years.
Correct.
It's all before then.
Yeah, I mean,
it is new, it's old new.
Yeah, there's a book you should probably get. It's called 20th Century Building Materials.
Yeah.
It's one I recommended that I put on the Patreon as a library drop a couple weeks ago. It goes through drywall. It goes through, you know, tiles and glass block and a bunch of different things that there isn't really much inspirational products, in my opinion, before 1940. Yeah, I mean, that goes back to my standard rant about, you know, the problem with building today, the lost art of building. We're no longer building the way we used to build, you know, and to talk about materials, it kind of just, it's another way of highlighting the problem with building, right?
You know what's so crazy? Like, going to Boston is just different. A lot of people are asking, like, well, what architectural styles are in, like, Texas? What architectural styles are in Colorado? I'm like, ranch, and then, like, colonial arrival, but, like, ranch. Because it's a lot of...
That's not exactly true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got some late Victorians.
Yes.
But Colorado and Texas both have late Victorians. And then, you know, a lot of arts and crafts and a lot of period revival stuff. But, I mean, there's a lot of ranch.
But I think what has happened is, I don't know. The way I always phrase it to people is like, when I'm going to Boston, I'm looking around and I'm like, holy crap, everything is built so well. Even the crappy homes are built with a lot of, like, good things on them, quote unquote. Like, so we have these two houses that are next to us that are for sale. And so we're looking at these two houses and we're like, oh my gosh, they are really well made and are really well designed. And so they've got really pretty well done gabled in returns. They don't have pork chop ends. They don't, you know, all these little things where I'm just like, this is great. They're getting these details right. And then I think I pointed them out to you and you're like, yeah, the materials suck. And it was one of those things where it was like, oh my gosh, they do.
Yeah,
they're all made of plastic. They're all made of, you know.
I think one thing I left Boston feeling like was that there is a greater number of craftsmen there than there are in Texas.
Yeah.
And the quality of building is, I think, higher. And they do get traditional details done better. Mm-hmm. I think that's because they have so many good examples to look at.
Yes. And I think even if they're subconsciously influenced
right,
by them,
right,
they're around it constantly.
They're like, well, that's how you do it. Just, yeah, see, it's right, right there.
And, right there is a good example.
Whereas here, yes, right, it's just like, well, I think everybody does it this way.
Right.
And it's all the pork chop ends and stuff.
For whatever reason, a lot of people, like that building tradition didn't necessarily, it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Well, and so I mean, the further we get away.
I think I told this story. I was in Ireland playing golf and looking at architecture, and every house had a stone wall in front of it.
Hmm.
And I was like, what is going on? You know, that they would spend money on this stone
wall.
Who
are they defending against?
Well, these were low garden walls, right?
Oh, interesting.
And so it was just like a standard house, maybe it was 1,500 square feet, wasn't very big. Stone wall around the front of the house, like, yeah, garden wall. I was like, that had to be expensive. Why would they do that? And you look at the building tradition of the older houses, they all had stone walls, yeah, in front of them. So it became this expectation,
right,
even though it's expensive. Well, that's how you do it. You don't do it any other way. And so I think things are built better in Europe because there's a standard there. It's just right, like, well, you never build it that way.
Right. New guy comes into town in Ireland, puts together a house plan, says, here, well, where's the stone wall?
Right.
What do you mean? Where's the stone wall?
You don't need a stone wall.
He's like, everyone has one. Where's it going to go? I don't know. Why do you need one? You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's so really interesting. I think it really is a product of your environment. And as poor building, because the worse something's built, the faster it can be made. And so the more of them are out there. And so you just get more and more bad builds, and over time you lose the, you know, whatever it may be, whatever those cool details are.
Well, it's just, I think people think I'm exaggerating when I say that most houses are ugly today. Mm-hmm. It's not me trying to be ugly. It's not me trying to be,
you're still mean,
rude. It's just a fact. I mean, just do the math.
Yeah.
Look how many houses D.R. Horton built, you know, built almost 100,000 houses. And so it's just like, you know, there's 50 of those guys. There's a million.
And the homes that they're building are not a varied selection of homes. It's, you've got home A through F, you know?
Yeah.
And so just printed a billion times. So if A through F are not even close to good, you're going to have a bunch of not even close to good.
And then what happens, the trickle down, the domino effect is that the high-end builder looks at that and they goes, well, I can build that with a couple thousand more square feet. And, right, you know, I can sell that for 800,000.
Right.
And you know, it was built for 300,000, right? And he makes this huge profit. But it's junk. It's junk.
Yeah.
And because there's a precedent, the homeowner doesn't know to ask better. And the homeowner is one that has to, or else it all falls apart.
Right. Well, and that's where I think this podcast is so beneficial for homeowners more than anyone else. Like, I think we talk to builders most of the time, but I think if homeowners knew a lot of these, you know, doctors hate him, they knew this one simple trick, you know, that if only that was the case, then people would be a lot more willing to push back. Because you talk about that a lot, like it's a fight, it's a battle, it's a you know,
yeah.
And I've never heard it echoed more than even at school, where people are like, you got to have these conversations with the builders. You got to fight for this. You got to, you know, push this in. I'm like, oh, he did go to this school. But, you know, it's very interesting what is going to persist, what is not going to persist. And, you know, new versus used, it is interesting how much we can truly go to used over new. And it's going to be interesting to see the pendulum, or the thing come back around and then swing the opposite direction. Or hopefully it does. Because I feel like there have been times where it has, you know, jumped back, or there have been good examples of things jumping back. But for however much the pendulum swings, more people do tend to, like, the whole mechanism itself.
Hopefully shifts. There's a tipping point to Malcolm Gladwell's book that hopefully there's a point where people go, wait a minute.
Why are we?
And it starts to change.
Yeah. But we'll see.
All right. Awesome stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you on the next one.